Leadership brings all kinds of prestige and pride with it. Oh, I'm a big man in this company. This time. Don't you know who I am? I'm the biggest. I own this company. Step aside, Buster. Shine my shoes. Hold the door open. Then he walks through. Yes. See, he now, I know, now I set him straight. It's like everyone's just a puppet, you know. Because basically most people are just being moved by the most of nature and they think they're controlling. And a real devotee knows I'm not the controller, but Krishna is moving me. Vishnu glances through Nama Tattva, and his glance is innumerable jivas that are resting until the next prakash inside the body of Mahavishnu. Vyakto Vyaktat, Avyakto Avyaktat, the verses in Gita. And their jivas are lying there with all, and contained within their chitta is their parabdha, and I mean rather their aparabdha and kutambijam, all their proclivities and tendencies to act in a particular karmic way in the material world because they're still here. So they're just sleeping. They're sleeping. Yoga Nidra within the body of Mahavishnu. Then he, at the time of creation, then he glances, and he's glancing and exhaling. He exhales. That one exhalation of Lord Vishnu is the entire time of material creation, one manifestation. When he looks, unlimited millions of jivas come out of his glance. So therefore, they're tatasta. They're spiritual because they're coming from Mahavishnu. But now they're on their way to journey to the pradhan, the personification or amalgamation of all the material of matter, material energy. That Bahiranga Shakti personified as Pradhana Mahatattva, you know, it divides and expands. So that receptive unit, the receiver, the aggressive unit is the male and the receiver is the female. So the propulsion, the aggression, emission of the glance, injection, whatever you want to call it, is a form of ejection, you know, like a man ejects his seed into the woman. So Vishnu is ejecting his seed through his eyes, like we hear, I don't know, that the peacock does the same thing. It's a very phenomenal bird. They say, Krishna, why do you wear a peacock feather on your head? To proclaim to the world that like peacocks, see, I'm like a peacock. Yes, I'm proud. Yes, I'm colorful. Dear Lalita, dear Prashant, dear Odita, dear Dhata. I'm a dear Lalita Nayak. I'm very proud of my talents and my I'm Kala Nidhi. I'm an ocean of limited arts, Kala Nidhi. And I'm beautiful like this peacock, and I can dance like this peacock, and I strut around proudly through my brush like a peacock. But what it really means, and it means all those things also, is that I'm colorful, I'm proud, I'm talented, I'm unique. Peacock is unique. Many birds, even they look alike. Is that a this or a that? Is that a sparrow or no, that's a robin or that's a this or cheerio, that's a... But there is no bird that looks like, no bird in the water, in the air, anywhere that looks like a peacock, right? Or acts like one. And there's no human bird or God, no human bird or God that looks like or acts like or struts like Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. That's not why he wears it. He wears it because he likes it. It's cool. And he's from the village. And village kids, as you know, they grow up in the village. They wander around the forest. In certain seasons, the peacocks molt. They drop their feathers. And they look so colorful. And kids are always attracted to something attractive, like anybody else. Hey, look at that. It's all brown leaves and green grass and a few twigs and sticks. And all of a sudden, boing, there's this rainbow peacock feather with an eye on it. Like when we go on a Perico Marg, it catches the eye, isn't it? Walking around the dry, dusty paths of Govardhan, and then you see a peacock with, and then you feel like you found a treasure. Oh, look at this. And you pick it up. He wears it to proclaim to the world that like the peacock who dances with women, who associates with women, but he remains a brahmachari because he has no intimate contact with them. I am the same way. I dance with women, not only women of my same species, humans. Of course, they're Antaranga Shakti, Krishna's Antaranga Shakti, but they're wives of others. And at the same time, all the while I maintain my pure brahmacharya. That's why the Gopalatapani Upanishad describes me and me alone and not Brahma and not Shiva, because they had some problems now and again, as the only brahmachari. As the only brahmachari. When demigods don't even count in the calculation, they're always going doing something funny. So therefore, this pika feather means I am a pakka Krishna tu brahmachari. Gopal Tapani, the Shrutis are telling, this is the Shrutis, the praman for all of Indian culture, the foundation of Indian culture is the Shrutis. The original Shruti was one, Atharva Veda, then expanded in Rig Sama Yajur and Atharva, the four Shrutis, and then got Smritis and all these agamas that come later as expansions and explanations and commentaries. So the Shrutis themselves, they're saying that the great mystery of Krishna, bewildered Brahma. We have one head and we're bewildered. Brahma has millions of heads and he's also bewildered. And some universes, Brahma has millions of heads and he still can't understand the guy in his universe. Because there may be a huge universe, because a bigger universe is a bigger Brahma. We have four heads, some have 8, 16. So some universes, Brahma has a million heads. And in every universe, there's an earth planet. In every universe, Krishna's pastimes appear. So in some universes, right, there's this, what do you call it, Brahma Vimohan Leela. So here we think, okay, you know, I'm bewildered by Krishna's activities, Janma Karma, I can't understand, it's bewildering. And look at Brahma, he was also bewildered, but you know, he has four heads and he's still bewildered. But that's nothing. What about the universe where Brahma has millions of heads? He's also bewildered by the same Krishna, doing the same thing. So therefore it's very bewildering to understand. But this is, the Shrutis are saying, don't be bewildered. We know who he is. We know who Krishna is. And we know that he's a brahmachari. You have to understand how this is all. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita abhis tabira yevani rupatiya kalavi goloka yevani vasatya kilakma bhuto. Govindamadi purusham. We not only understand that these gopis are as nija shakti. There's, if you expand, you have one arm and you expand it. If I have one arm and then I expand another arm and I wrap myself around my two arms, that means I'm doing something wrong. If I go like this, hey, what are you doing with your right arm behind your back and your left arm in front of your... What are you doing? So I'm embracing myself. Wow, I'm nice, you know. Isn't it? You know, I can get my arms around me and hug myself tightly. So that's all Krishna's doing. He's wrapping his arms around himself and hugging himself tightly. His very self is the expansion of the gopis. So there's no problem. So this peacock feather is like that. So, but now back to Shiva, this is the problem. Why is he worshipped as Linga? So that glance is the Jivas, because there's no life without Jiva. Just carrying a glance doesn't mean anything. Carrying somebody's eyeball, reflections of your eyeball and retina and all this karma and all this stuff. So Shiva's carrying the Jivas because he has some seva connected with Tamagun. So he carries a glance and then it's received by Rama, his wife, the genital, the female, the receptive organ of creation. So he, in one sense, he's the active principle, but he's not the source of life. The source of life is God, Vishnu. The Jiva is life. You follow? And it represents all that tattva. Basically, Shiva represents the enjoying, the tendency to want to enjoy, which that's why he's carrying the Jivas, because the Jivas are carrying that potency. Every one of us has a tendency to enjoy. The ant has a tendency to enjoy sugar. It's his sanskar, it's his tendency. He eats all kinds of other bugs, and you see ants, they eat. If some lizard dies and falls on the floor, the ants come and eat his body. So they enjoy flesh. It's like, you know, dead lizards. It's a great feast. So you may have a great feast of dal and pakoras, but then when the sweet rice comes, it doesn't always come, but you can have a big feast without sweet rice. Then you're like, wow, like this is really good now. So they're eating dead lizards, and that's like a huge mahotsav. Chanti Mahotsav. So then when the sugar comes to the ant, because his basic tendency is to enjoy, not necessarily female ants, but to enjoy, and that may be the most pleasurable object to enjoy, that's undeniable, and for everyone, even ants, I suppose. But when he gets that sugar, as opposed to dead lizards, and then he expresses his enjoying propensity to the max. So we enjoy so many things, but that's that other thing, man and woman, is the most, you know, desirable or whatever. So the I would say that the tendency of the living entity, as is God, is that God is the supreme enjoyer. Bhuktaram yagatapasam. Matter of fact, that's a very, you know, for a few minutes in every day, he enjoys what was transcendental union, divine union with his own spiritual counterpart, Srimati Radharani, his own energy, Ladini Shakti personified. He is the source of the energy, and let's say that form of Radharani, then it's so pleasurable and tasty because it's imbued with dedication to him. It's hard to be dedicated to yourself. A lot of people are, or they try to be. But Radharani becomes imbued with some special flavor which Yogamaya arranges to entice Krishna and satisfy him. And it even says so many places in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna, he gets more pleasure enjoying the different aspects of the rasa dance than he does from, you know, just the dancing and seeing the expertise and of the gopis than he does from the conjugal sports and intimacy. So it's, again, we should refine that presentation, that the desire for sex life is the, that's, I would rather get back to the primordial urge of enjoyment. You follow? Because we're part of Krishna. He has, the basic bottom line is, we want to be happy, isn't it? Everyone will agree. Sex or no sex, you know, there's plenty of celibate women and men in the world, nuns and this and that, that are happy, really happy. And they're just feeling, you know, atmaram, atmakam. Believe it or not, it's possible. And so that means that the real thing is happiness, which it's another way of saying happiness. The basic drive is the search for happiness, enjoyment. It's just a word, semantics. And whether it comes that way or not, okay. Like some yogi, you know, some hedonist may meet a yogi and say, oh, you know, you guys, you're a yogi, you know, you're a Bal yogi from birth. And, you know, you never had sex, so you don't know what you're missing, because that's the greatest pleasure in the material world. Even Shiva's after that. He says, are you kidding me, man? You know, this happiness and bliss you're talking about, this is called, you know, Martyananda. There's different divisions of bliss which are explained in Puranas, which I described in my Nectar Devotion days, which are so good. I don't mean BRS, Bhakti Rasa, I mean Nectar Devotion. Yes. They're too good. Why is Lord Shiva worshipped in linga form? Because what happened was that Brahma came to Pushkar, which is in Rajasthan. It's a very holy place, Lord Brahma. And he wanted to do a big yajna there and puja there. Because it's a famous Tirtha and Dharma Kshetra religious place for doing these things. For yuga after yuga after yuga, Pushkar is called Tirtha Raj. Sometimes Prayag, and some yugas, Prayag, Allahabad is called Prayag Tirtha Raj. You must have heard this term. But that's maybe only in Kali Yuga or maybe Dwapara. But in other yugas, Pushkar is called Tirtha Raj. So very, very powerful place, and that people take a bath there and all this. So Brahma went there to do a yajna, and kings, and they have to do these yajnas with their wife sitting with them. Like Lord Ramachandra would do yajnas with Sita next to him and all this. So they were up there in Brahma Loka, and they had to get down, you know, get on their swan plane. Swan Jet, Hansa Airlines, and fly down on time. And so his wife was busy spraying her hair and putting on her earrings and stuff, taking time, looking pretty, as usual. So he couldn't wait. He said, I'm going. The Brahmins are waiting. So he went there, and he said, where's your wife? You can't sit into the yajna and conduct this huge puja, ashwamedha or whatever it was, without your wife. And he said, well, she's busy, and he said, running out of time, you need to get a wife fast. So he said, well, these are all earthly beings. I'm a celestial. I can't take one of these Rajasthani, you know, women over here. So he said, look, we have to turn one of these women into a devi, into a demigoddess. So the Brahmins are pretty clever. They have all kinds of interesting tricks up their sleeves and stuff. So they said, listen, we'll go to this nearby village. There's some cowherd people there, because Pushkar is like, you know, out in the kind of desert and country place. So they went to some village and they found some goshas or some gwals, some some gopals, you know, gopas, coward people. And they said, "Do you have any virgin girls here?" And they said, "Yeah, this one's over here." They said, "Look, we just have to borrow her for a little while for this puja." And so they gave a bunch of donations and saris and stuff, and they took her. And when they got there, they had one cow. And then they put her in the mouth of the cow. She was a little nervous, of course. They'd eaten by the cow. So they said, "Don't worry, everything will be all right in the end." Right? So they put her in the cow's mouth and took her out the end. Took her out the end of the cow. So when she came out of the end of the cow, then she had a celestial body. And because the cow represents all the demigods, all Gomata, at least the Surabhi Indian cow, all the demigods live in different parts of the cow's body. And all of them. So now she, and then, so Brahma said, well, what's her name? And he said, "Well, she's been delivered. She's been delivered from the cow. So she's, call her a Gayatri. Gaya means cow, and tree or chayate means to deliver. So she's been delivered from the cow, born from the cow, created by the cow, so to speak. So she's Gayatri Devi." So she became Brahma's wife, one of his wives. So she sat for the yagyas. Swaha, swaha, swaha. So meanwhile, Mrs. Brahma came. I think her name is Savitri. Generally, it's mostly they say his wife's name is Savitri. In some places they say Saraswati. And sometimes they say Saraswati is daughter. But majority of scriptures will of the consensus that his wife, primary wife, is Savitri. Savitri came to sit beside her husband. She got, who's this? Someone's taking my place? And the Brahmin said, "Hey, cool down. You know, she's just here for this yoga. She's like a proxy. And don't mind, you know, the original wife will be back soon." So the yoga is almost over. Just keep cool, and then he'll be with you in a few minutes, and you go. You can take care of him afterwards, but don't disturb the yoga. So she is making a disturbance. So then the yoga was over, and then Gayatri, I don't know, whatever, she just became part of the firmament of demigods or something, his wife or whatever. And then, but then, of course, his wife, Savitri, was angry, because this is, cheated. You got another wife. You couldn't wait for me to go to the party, so you picked up another wife. I mean, that's pretty low class. I mean, can't you be a little patient? I mean, I was getting dressed up to look good for you and me too, but that's a little too much. So she got angry, and then she was giving her husband a sauce. She was yelling at him, and then she cursed him. She said, "You rascal." She said, "You come all the way here to the middle of the desert from the heavenly planets to do this puja because this is such an auspicious, religious, dharmic, punya place. And you don't even take me along, and I missed the whole auspicious event. So I curse you that the only place in the world that you'll be worshipped is Pushkar. No place else in this planet will you and Brahma be worshipped anywhere." And that's a fact. Curse holds true. Every other demigod, Varuna, is worshipped in different places, and every demigod is worshipped in different states. But not her. And then when that was happening to Brahma, then Shiva was kind of snickering. He was going, "Brahma," because sometimes Parvati gets on his case, you know, yells at Shiva, so that he was going, "Oh wow, he's getting the sauce. my brother demigod, his wife saucing him, rebuke him." So he went, kind of laughed a little bit at Brahma. And Savitri said, "You think it's funny, huh? You sit around all the time naked with your wife, Parvati, huh? Okay, you're in this world, you're only giving worship as a linga and a yoni." And then she stormed off back to Brahmaloka. So that, why is Lord Shiva worshipped as a Shiva linga, which is a question I asked. And according to this Puranic story, which may or may not be, all the listeners on the internet who hear these tapes, don't get confused. I'm not saying he is, he could be. And we're waiting for further confirmation. So hold it right there. But stories like this certainly abound in the Puranas. There's abundance of stories of this one and that one getting cursed to be this and that and stones and every kind of thing. and you know the Aishwarya of Vishnu and Krishna getting cursed and Shalagrams and all these things go on and different expansions and levels and dhams. So they do go on somehow, but I can't verify this, but it's interesting story about how, why Lord Shiva is worshipped as a linga. Because, I mean, everything is in character. Wives do get angry, and wives do curse people. That sounds right. We can relate to that, you know. Women get angry, you this, that. And, you know, men are impatient. So that's all in character. Men are impatient. Women are busy always getting dressed, and it's a very common thing. So the demigods there's not much difference, but they have subtle bodies, and the construction of their body is not stool and urine and all these kind of gross things. So there's not much scope for medical school up there in heavenly planets, and you won't be able to get any jobs up there because there's no hospitals and no medical schools because they don't have all these, you know, breakable parts, you know, moving parts that break and stuff. Because their bodies are made of mind. They're made of mind. We have our mental body also, but unfortunately, strapped on top of that mental body is a big, messy, heavy, gross body, linga sharir, I believe so. Shukshma sharir is the subtle body, the mental body. So they don't have this particular configuration of linga of our external, which means our external material body. But they have it's mind, but they have mind and mind, or outside mind, inside mind. Or inside mind and outside stool. Urine, pus, bones. They don't have bones, you know. There's no surgery. It's hard to understand. It's not that hard. You ever take rest at night? And did you ever dream? And then in the swapna, then you see what? Do you see air?
Everything.
You see bodies.
Everything.
What are they made of? What are those bodies made of you see in a dream?
Mind.
Mind. So they're mental bodies. The same with subtle beings, boots, prates, ghosts, they have mental bodies. Like with your mind, you can't go, with your body, you can't walk through this wall, but with your mind, you can walk through the wall because you can imagine what's on the other side. You can think your way through the wall. So the ghosts, they think their way through matter. Ghosts can pass through the wall. They don't have to go through the front door. Because mind is smaller than the air, is it? Do you agree that mind is smaller than air? Yes? So what's inside the wall? Cement. What's the cement made out of? Water and sand and all these things and glue and all these things. So there's air in there. There's air everywhere. There's air in that wall. So the mind, they can just pass through because the mind is finer. What do we say in the Bhagavad Gita? Finer than the body is the senses. Finer than the senses is the mind. Finer than the mind is the intelligence. So these are pretty fine entities. Microscopic, invisible, powerful. Tattva Darshan, the glories of Magmas, Brut. And as you may know, there are three most auspicious months in the year, and they are Magmas to begin the year, and then in the middle, Vaishakh, Chaitra Vaishakh, which is April, May. And towards the end of the year is Kartik. Kartik is a special month to get the mercy of Srimati Radharani for those who are so inclined. But generally, and the worshippers of Radha and Krishna, but across the board, Vaishnavas of any type, and even yogis and others, they invariably strictly observe Magmas Brut. It's much more significant and popular and widespread throughout India, much more than Vaishakh or Kartik. All three of them are described in Padma Purana and Skanda and other Puranas, the virtues of them all. Sanatana Goswami highlights all, especially Magmas Brut, a lot in his Hari Bhakti Vilas, in the 14th Vilas. And so we've taken a summary of that, the essential points in a few pages, and we put it on our website. You can download it or read it or whatever, how it works. But it's really quite amazing. And I was thinking about this morning. I was praying to Radharani and to Madhav. This is the month of Madhav. That somehow, as long as I'm moving, I can observe this vow every year. And I may travel and preach here and there, but I want to be in Braj every day of my life. But maybe I should go sometimes to Delhi, Bombay for preaching, or other places. But I want to hope to pray that I can be in Brajdham for Magh Mas and for Kartik, and even best Chaturmasya, which spent the last 25 Chaturmasyas in Vrindavan. So that's a nice thing. But I came aware of this English edition of Hari Bhakti Vilasa, Great Virtues. I'm really excited about it, and we're sharing with it all. You're a little restrained because you're living in the cities. But when you move to the Dham, I would hope you can take more advantage of this. And the keynote of Kartik is offering ghee lamps and everywhere. Hanging ghee lamps, rows of ghee lamps called Deepavali, a row of ghee lamps, Deepavali, series of, and Akhanda Deepam, and daily Deepams to trees, to Ashwat trees every day, and to, of course, Krishna and Radharani, Damodar. It's big time for lights. And that's like the main thing to do. And even if you don't do too many other things, if you just have a lot of ghee lamps and oil lamps and sesame and all over the place lights, you get all kinds of benefit. And forget about fasting. It's Kali Yuga, and they know more than anything how weak we are in all these departments. They say, listen, just keep, you know, like Arjuna arrows were always coming in his hand, you know. He was shooting arrows one after the other, so we should just keep a whole quiver full of ghee wicks and keep firing ghee wicks. Oh, this tree, okay, ghee wick. This body, holy body of water, float, Jamuna River, float a ghee wick. This Tagriti, ghee wick, ancestors, pea trees, everybody ghee wicks. That's really the main thing, if I look back in a very summary way on the whole thing. That's the minimal and most powerful thing. And in a similar way, in Magh Mas, it doesn't say anything about ghee lamps at all. Very interesting. Although it's a mahatmya and it's very powerful. Whereas the Lord and the concerned parties, especially Radharani, are pleased, and Kartik with Deepam, offerings of ghee, and there's even a whole day called Deepavali, isn't there? So it's not exactly, it's not New Year's, it's just it's a happy time, like something like that, isn't it? Celebration time. Something like Christmas, but that Christmas is celebrating a function of the appearance of the Son of God, yes? And so this is also related, a godly festival celebrating the return of our Lord Ram by all his worshippers, which is all of India and all the world, for that matter. So the same way in Magh Mas, it's the month of taking a bath, bathing. Okay, well, what? I bathe every day in my house. But it says, no, outside. Why outside? Even a mud puddle outside, or even a balti or a bucket of water you leave outside all night long in the stars and the planets, and bring it in your house, that's the minimal, least, you know, observance of the actual touching the brata, is to take that kind of bath, outdoor bath, and even that goes to that extent. You're staying in Bombay and Mount Mary and some stupid building, and you can put on the rooftop, maybe in the veranda, but hardly it gets exposed. But definitely should be clearly exposed to the stars and moon. And what happens is what they say in the Shastras, why that's not just to give you a nice cold bath, because the water will surely be cold when it comes in, especially in North India when it's 4 degrees at night, centigrade, which it was many nights over here. Same in Delhi. But actually all the planets and all the holy places, they invest all their shaktis. It's all very subtle consideration, obviously. But they invest all their shaktis and powers in any outside standing body of water. Just as in Kumbh Mela, which also happens the same month, Kumbh means the pot of Mohini. Mohini was carrying a pot of nectar produced from the churning of the Mantan, Samudra, Mantan, of the Devas and Asuras. And out came this nectar, and Mohini was bearing that pot, and then they were jostling for it. the demigods and demons, and she dropped some. And when it fell at particular times, at particular, maybe different places, but definitely it's said that on different days during Magh, I guess maybe that was a time when this Leela happened in Magh Mass, that there was different times, different times of that month, and it fell, and then in Kumbh Mela, that's why it's called Kumbh Mela, the Mela of the Kumbh, Amohini's Nectar Kumbh, because they say the nectar is falling, so there's particular days on Sankranti or certain days when they say that if you go at this time, the nectar, this celestial invisible nectar coming from this immortality pot of Mohini Murti is falling onto the earth planet and landing in the Ganga, Jamuna, Saraswati, at the Triveni. So that's the tattva, or the philosophy, why they bathe in the Lalabad, why in Magh. I lived there for 1 month in 1989 and 1 week in 1995, and took all the appropriate baths over there, and this was explained to me. Now that's occasional, a few days, Amavasya, etc., a few key days in the month when this phenomenon happens, this nectar surcharged water. But just being there is also auspicious to being bathed, you know, at that Triveni during this month of Magh, or any sacred river or any body of water. But in Magh, there's some speciality that every day, you know, throughout the night, day and night, but somehow they say put the bucket at night, the every day of the month, the energy, the bodies of water are collecting the energies of all the rishis, the sages, the holy place, the stars, everything are being collected. So consequently, there's tremendous boons and benedictions when you take bath, early morning bath, especially before sunrise for some reason. I guess it's more austere, more cold. And you get, you know, long life and health and all these things. So this is a very interesting thing that they deposit. Like someone might say, where's all your money? Oh, I deposited it under that neem tree in the park. Okay, see ya. And you run over to the neem tree and collect the money. So all the holy places, rather than going here and there and everywhere, oh, you want to get our mercy, blessings, power, ashirvad, all this. Well, we stored it all. We deposit it all in bodies of water. In the Ganga, Saraswati, Narmada, the Jamuna, even any lake, any body of water, but especially, of course, in a holy place. So it says it's the duty of every human being to bathe in a holy place during Magh Mass to please Lord Krishna. Water in the month of Magh, bodies of water outside the home become completely pure, and they destroy all, in other words, they destroy unlimited amounts of sin. So every lake and river and Jamaica Barbados and all these islands and Trinidad and America, and they become Ganga. They become like Pavitra Nadi, Pavitra lakes, purifying lakes. And these five activities are very pleasing to Lord Krishna. One, to observe Magh Brat. Two, to observe Kartik Brat. Three, to chant the 12-syllable mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Four, to worship Lord Vishnu, Archan, every day with 16 articles. Sodash Achara, 16 articles of Upachara. Five, maintain a Tulsi grove to take care of Tulsi plants. A grove can be a rooftop garden. Some people in Delhi, they have a bunch of Tulsi plants growing on the roof or in some area. And because of their bhakti and attention and green thumb or whatever, they're growing really well. I've seen that in many places, quite impressive. That's a very wonderful and pleasing thing to the Lord. Then this details, and then it's just something about the, if one bathes outside, he gets 1,000 times and 10,000, a million and all these kind of things. But at least a couple times in a month we should try and bathe outside the home. It says it's so, the sages are so merciful and so kind, because you may live in Rajasthan and there's no too many lakes and things are pretty dried up out there. It's like a desert most of the places. So it says, so you can, just what you can do is dig a little hole in the sand in the desert and you can throw some water in there. And then it says, even bathing in a mud puddle awards mukti. It's called mud puddle mukti. Mud puddle mukti. You know, mud means mitti. Mitti puddle mukti. So you have a little, you take some earth. Earth means mitti, clay. You dig the earth and make a little place where you can bathe, a little bathing hole. And there's no water there because there's a desert. So you go in your house and get out of your tank and put it there outside. And it gets in that. And you just go there with it, sit on the side with a low tip. Shh, shh. All right. Just see the mercy and the power of Magmas Ki Jai. Even, this was, I had to put this in here, it was too much. Even bathing in a mud puddle, a little hole in the earth full of water, that's a mud puddle, it awards mukti. And even it describes a house bucket. It says, set a bucket outside in the open air overnight, bring it inside and bathe. This equals bathing in a holy place. And some devotees, believe it or not, are actually doing that. Such a bath bestows all desirable objects. One, and I suggested a little appendix. I said, add a drop of Ganga water, Jamuna, or Radhakund water just for bhav. You know, okay, I'm getting liberation and all these benefits, all the holy rivers are here, but I just want to make sure Rami's here too. Put Radhakund in there too. So that's there. So then you can have that bhav that I'm bathing in Radhakund, because unfortunately I'm not in Radhakund. I'm in Delhi Kund, or in Bombay Kund, or some other Kund, or Nara Kund, or, you know. And then, so that's there. And the presiding lord of this month is called Madhava. It's the month of Madhava. In the Vedic system, a child can be born according to the Janam Nakshatra, the Rasi. It's actually called the Rasi. Where's the moon, and what house or sign when you're born? So is it, you know, the moon is in Capricorn or Aries or Pisces or what do you call it? You know, Danu or Singha or Mace or Taurus and this and that, Makar. And then that's a syllable, ga, pa, da, ni, that's that. Then the pandits will pick a name to go with that vibration. Another system which is not so popular, it can be, this is done by anybody because they pick names like, you know, Rinky, Tinky, this, that, any kind of name, it might have the right syllables. But another system more practiced by Vaishnavas that are strict worshippers of Vishnu, they name their children after the month they're born in, the Vedic name. So all the 12 tilak marks that we have are month names of the month. There's Madhavayana, Govindavayana, Keshavaya. So there's a month, there's a Keshava month, there's a Madhava month, Damodaraya month, there's Damodara month, which you know, Kartik. So that these, there's a month, Padmanav, Madhusudan, and like this. So the month of January, February, we call Magmas. This is called Madhav Mas, named after Madhav, which is a name for a former Lord Vishnu, actually, and also Radha Madhav. So interestingly enough, you know, Prabhupada generally followed the system that whatever his disciple's name, if his name, the guy's name was George, his American name, George, it begins with G. So then he would give him the name Gadadhar. You know, it's Ga, so G. His name is Stephen Gorino. So he gets the name Satsarup. His name is Harry Lechner or something. So he gets the name Ridayananda, like this. So Prabhupada, you know, he's all knowing and he gives me the name Mahanidhi. And M-A is spot on to the month I'm born. I'm born in Madhav month. So that is not the Rasi name. The Rasi name would be Ghi, the Rasi, my Janam Rasi would be Ghi, like Gitam or Girdar or Giraj. That's also an interesting side note. Since my Ishtadeva is Giriraj. Giriraj, Maharaj, Aki, Jai. So, that's that. So Prabhupada named me Mahanidhi rather, after Madhav month. And I rather like that name, because it also has some higher implications, and also, and Prabhupada knows all these things. And then he reveals all these things to the disciple when they need to know these things. Yes? Yes. So just by bathing in a holy place for 3 days, one gets wealth and long life. One becomes free from all distress and sins and goes to Swarga if you want to stop there. If you don't want to stop there, then keep going to Vaikuntha with 21 generations. And it's like it's basic idea is take a bath. Get clean. Take a bath and get clean. Because by this bath, you'll really get clean. You clean out all your karmic files. You just empty all your trash cans. All your computer trash cans full of karma will get dumped out. Daily snag bath destroys all sins and calamities, pleases Lord Vishnu and gives liberation. Mag snan fulfills all one's desires. If one takes mag snan anywhere outside of his home, a mag snan at Prayag is equal to worshipping Lord Vishnu at 100 crores of other places. Prayag is a Lalabad, right? Kumbh Mela. That's why everyone else hears these things in all the little villages of India. Hey, let's back up, Joe, and go. You know, they hear these things. Nanda Maharaj heard the glories of a Ganga bath, and he packed up everybody. He was off to going to the Ganga. And Krishna Bhavan said, what's this? Now we're going to Prayag, the Tirtharaj. My father's going to Tirtharaj because some yogis were telling, some Bhagari Rishi and Sandili Muni were glorifying Tirtharaj. Now he's all jacked up to go there and take a bath and get free from his sins. So then they got as far as, you know, Govardhan, Dan Gati, and they crossed over the pass and go up down the other side and go up down on there to Haridwar. I mean, to Allahabad. And then Krishna said, Dalji said, this is ridiculous. You know, we can't leave Braj. You know, I don't know about you. I got my gopis. I can't leave my girlfriends. And Pandava said, what about me? I have my girlfriends too. I have my gopis. I mean, you know, I can't leave my girls any more than you can. I mean, that's right. We got to do something. And then Balaram says, look, Krishna, you're supposed to do the magic around here. I'm supposed to just pretend I don't know what you're doing. So then Krishna says, okay, well, let's say, Dalji, what should we do? And then Dalji's pretty smart. So Dal said, well, Krishna, you know, why instead of us going to the Ganga, why don't we bring the Ganga here? And then Balaram says, hey, Gadagraja, my older brother, you're smart. You know, that's a good idea. And then Krishna closed his eyes. Gange, 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 Aal, Jaldi Aal. And all this, and she's standing there in a crocodile. Yes, Prabhu. Oh, my worshipable Lord, I will offer whatever you want. I will submit to your will. Please, how can I serve you? She says, yes, just fill this little depression here. Go over down the hill, make it beautiful. Let these waters of Ganga flow here. So everyone was sleeping. All the cap, everyone to the cap. Everyone was sleeping in the cap and their bullocks and everything all gathered around. And Ganga and Dao and Krishna having this whole dialogue privately at night. And she was so thrilled to have his darshan. You can imagine. God calls you. Hey, Bill Gates says, hey, tell Ravi, you know, Ravinder Patel, I want him to come to Los Angeles. I want to talk to him. Take my private jet, go to Delhi, pick the guy up. I want to talk to this guy. I think he's pretty smart. We can do business with this guy. So then all of a sudden the plane arrives and flies you off to L.A. to meet with Bill Gates, you know. So that's like, you know, if you get invited, you can get darshan. Otherwise, forget it. So Krishna, Ganga was thrilled to serve Ganga Devi. Ganga Devi was thrilled to serve Krishna. So then they woke up and Krishna said, Daddy, look. Just we were thinking about Ganga and the Ganga's coming. And they said, oh yes, Manasi Ganga, Manasi Ganga. And in fact, it did. It came from Krishna's thoughts, from Krishna's mind. Manasi Ganga ki. Sure. So that's if you bathe at Prayag, you'll get 100 crores of bathing other places. I mean, worshipping Vishnu. But what about if you bathe at Radhakund? Because if you bathe once in Prayag, that mag snan, that equals to worshipping Lord Vishnu in 100 crores of other places. Right? 100 crores. So what about if you bathe in Radhakund, which is Ganga, Jamuna, Saraswati, Triveni, Sakshat. There's not Triveni. Triveni's not in Prayag and Allahabad. Triveni is Doveni. There's only two branches, the Ganga and Jamuna mixed there. Now you're going to like this. Bath rules. You don't have to follow any other vow. Nothing else is required except bathing in a holy place. All right. No fasting. Some people are fasting this month. Some really ridiculous, excessive, you know, followers of Rupa and Raghunath. You know, those people who want to follow Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami externally in their sadhaka rupa and internally in their siddha rupa. And they're like really crazy. They actually are, they're trying to do vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vedam, mudra pasta vegam. They're actually trying to control their tongues, and they're so totally out of control that they're eating once a day. Okay, that's nice, but eat like, you know, kachoris, dal rice, everything. They're only eating khichdi. Okay, that's enough to just make you wonder what happened to this guy's brains or this lady's brains. And then not only that, then they go so far as to say, why not give up salt also? Because there are five tastes that we can enjoy. We enjoy salty things and sweet things and bitter things and pungent things. But in khichdi, with ghee, you can have ghee. If you have ghee and dal and rice, there is absolutely zero taste. There's no, the five tastes are not present there. So when one eats havyashan, which the gopis ate during Marga Shirsha to attain Krishna as their husband, was it Katyayani Mahamaye Mahayogi Nidishvari Nandagopam Sutam Devim Patim Me Kurutena Maha? They were praying to Katyayani Yogamaya Ma in Vrindavan at the Jamuna and worshipping every day. Please make the son of Nandamaraj your husband, and eating Havishan. They were eating khichdi without salt or spices or anything. Rice, dal, and ghee. And for North Indian coward girls, rice is pretty austere. You can imagine. How many people in UP eat rice? Okay, sometimes, somewhere, a little bit. How many Punjabis eat rice? Sometimes, somewhere, a little bit. How many Haryanis, whatever they call them, how many? Sometimes, somewhere, a little bit. Because it's not the grain of this weather. You know, we need wheat. So it's, and then it was freezing, it was cold. So that's, that can go to that extent. But you don't have to. So some people, it says you don't have to, but they do. So they're not very intelligent. Because if they're smart, they say, well, if you don't have to, then why should I? Why should I do more? Remember the motto. Right? What's our motto? Our motto is less is more, and more is more. Now this seems to be confusing. This is one of our one-liners we said before. More is more and less is more. This seems to be mutually exclusive. Less material activities, less material involvement, less material attachments equals more spiritual advancement, more spiritual practices, more attachment to Krishna. So less is more. And then more is more means if you chant more rounds, and do, perform more austerity and do more Vaishnava Seva, Hari Guru Vaishnava Seva, and study more, read more, serve more, then you make more and more spiritual advancement. Tyaktva Turnam Ashisha Mandalapati Srinim Sada Tuchavat Sankhya Purva Ganama Gana Natabika Lava Sandra. He says that they renounced everything. So renunciation, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. That this worship that was introduced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Brajavadu Vadanam, Brajavadu Vadu Ramya Kachit Upasanam, this Ramya Upasanam, this Radha Krishna Madhurya Ramya, Ramya Upasanam, this worship of this sweet delight and tender loving dealings of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan and Madhurya Bhav and Sakhi Bhav, Mantri Bhav, this is the Nija Bhakti Yoga. This is the way to link with God in the highest Dhamma of the Lord and the highest form of the Lord, Radha Krishna Yugal. And this is Nija, his own. This is what Gauranga Radharani has come to distribute to the world, to the qualified people. And what is the basis of this? What is the basis? This in this verse, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. This is the Prayojan, Nija Bhakti Yoga, and is also the Abhideya. And what is the basis of it? The sambandha, the basis, the foundation of to attain that goal is vairagya and vidya. And of course, pure bhakti brings both. That's told in the first canto of Bhagavatam. That by practicing ahoitaki bhakti, vairagya and vidya automatically come. And so automatically, as one increases their devotion, they want to give up more and more. So, more is more. more spiritual practice, more surrender, more detachment is more spiritual progress. But that's why I like this, because in Kartik there are very all kinds of detailed vrattas besides the Gila. So here it's, you don't, that's what's special about Magmas. Mag means M-A, Ma, maximum mercy. Ma, this is Kartik. It's Kartik means it's critical. It's it's difficult. Kart, Karta, whatever. It's, Kartika, Kritika. There's a lot of eating things and this and that and shaving this, that. So the same books that are describing the Kartik Mahatmyam, Padmapurana, also describes the Mag Mahatmyam. And the Kartik Mahatmyam say all these things. Havishan and so many things. And don't give up milk products and for Chaturmasi. But then when it describes Magmas Mahatmyam, it says, Chalega. Just get your body out of your house and bathe, or get the freezing cold water in your house and bathe, or whatever, bathe. And once you make it a habit, it becomes second nature. And rather, you look forward to it. And it's extremely healthy, even from an Ayurvedic viewpoint. A cold morning bath is the most beneficial thing for human health. Gives good health, beauty, good qualities, wealth, and long life. I don't think anyone would not want those things. Does everyone want? Everyone wants good health and beauty and good qualities and wealth and long life. Well, if you're destined to receive all these things in this life, which you may very well be, or already have in your hand, good looks and all these things, it may be because in your last life you did the same type of vrattas, and you're getting the fall. And you also have the samskaras that continue in this life to do the same type of vrattas. So then again, next life you'll be pretty and handsome or pretty or intelligent and wealthy and all the things. And if you have, it's because whatever we have now is a result of our previous activities. And if we do nothing now, then guess what happens next life? If you deposit nothing in a bank and spend whatever you saved, then what happens? Pretty soon you're bankrupt. So I think I basically gave you the idea, and you can read more on your leisure. Now, I wanted to mention this one thing, and then one other thing. This is part of the same class that I had. I had a very nice birthday gift last night. A pundit appeared in my dream. And I don't... it's the first time I ever dreamed about a Brijvasi. And so I was rather impressed and... interpretation and what it all means and this and that, it has a lot of things, but I just wrote a little bit of, just wrote it down, and I thought I'd read it to you and maybe comment on it. It's a brief, if nothing else, an exercise in writing and a recording for my future remembrances. And I just called it Swapna Shiksha. Shiksha, I believe, means instructions or teachings, and swapna means dream. It was a complete dream. On the night of my 60th birthday anniversary, because I'd already entered the time, started already, titi. On the night of my 60th birthday anniversary, Shama Sundar Das Pandit, a Brijvasi Pandit serving Radhakund Sangam, appeared in my dream about 3 a.m. Shamsundar Pandit sits all day, every day, from 6 a.m. to lunchtime, then from 3 p.m. till 9 p.m. inside the Radhakrishna Charan Chinna Mandir, exactly opposite the central shrine of Giriraj Baba in the middle of Radhakund, known as the Radhakund Sangam. Everyone familiar with that particular place? White marble, some feet of... You just seen it. All right. Winter, summer, every season, Shama Sundar Pandit is there chanting, praying, and constantly repeating out loud the Gopal mantra. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Vala. Thus initiating everyone he meets. He's a Brahmin. Brahmins are the guru of society. Sannyasis are the gurus of Brahmins. And as the Brijvasis say, Brijvasis are the gurus of sannyasis. That's a nice thing. And in one sense, they are just like, Krishna is the guru of everyone. Adi Guru is Krishna, and he taught Brahma, and Brahma taught Narada. But who's the guru of Krishna? A Brijvasi. Yes? Who is that Brijavasi? Radha Rani Ki Jai. So the Adi Adi Guru is Radharani, the Guru of the Guru. Narada Muni thought his father was God. And then one day he saw some guy came with four arms, and then Brahma made a lot of excitement about it. Sadamanasan started doing puja and worship, and Narada Muni said, "Who's this?" And then he left and he was quiet, and he was a little kid. He said, "Who's this? You were worshiping someone. I thought you were God." He said, "No, I'm not God. You're just a kid. I didn't want to try to explain everything to you. This is Lord Vishnu. He's the God. He's God. He's my origin. Watch out, there's somebody behind you." So behind Krishna is the original Adi Guru, Prem Guru, Radharani. And in one sense, the Brijavasis are the ultimate gurus, because they have the ultimate Lord and the ultimate Dham and the ultimate conception of love. So that's what the highest guru will give, the highest ontology of the absolute truth. Winter, summer, every season, Shyamasundara Pandit is there chanting, praying, and constantly repeating out loud the Gopal mantra, thus initiating everyone he meets. When audibly pronouncing the mantra in a deep voice resonating, he makes it a point to more loudly chant for emphasis one word of the Gopal mantra, which he ends the mantra with, and that is Gopi Jana Vallabha. Sometimes he says Swahami. He says Kalim Krishnaya Govindaya. Gopi Jana Vallabha. Gopi Jana Vallabha. So nice. Sri Krishna is the lover of the Braja Gopis, especially Srimati Radhika. It's very clear that Shyamasundara Pandit is expressing his heart and full realizations that Srimati Radharani rules supreme in Radhakund, and that he, Shyamasundara Pandit, is dedicated and sold out to her alone. Jai Jai Sri Radhe Shyam. This blissful octogarian, or whatever you call it, how do you call it? Somebody who lived in the 80s, there's a name for that, octogarian or something. This blissful octogarian appeared in my dream to pronounce a most startling fact about the virtues of Magh month Brata and how seriously it was once observed here at Shri Kund. Shyamasundara Pandit said, as clear as day, in my dream, that's an expression, slang, means very clearly, "Swamiji, it's nice you're doing Magh month Brata, but do you know that previously the Radhakund Brahmins would very strictly observe Magmas by only drinking Gomutra once a day and eating nothing else for 1 month. And they would pass their days observing Akanda Bhagavat Katha, daily speaking on the Srimad Bhagavatam for hours on end. This is a Magmas Brata." Shortly after this amazing dream, we woke up feeling refreshed, and even though I had only wasted 5 hours sleeping instead of our usual six. Jaya Radhe, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Vrindavan, Jaya Jaya Brijavasi, Ki Jai. Shyamasundara Das Pandit, Ki Jai. So whatever little thing we're doing, it's never very much. Whether we can do more, that remains to be seen, but we do whatever we can, the best we can, and as an offering to Krishna for his pleasure. Oh, Achyuta. O Achyuta, O Damodar, O Achyuta, O Damodar, O Giriraj, O Madhav, I'm taking this early morning bath in the month of Magh for your pleasure. Please be satisfied with my small attempts to gain your favor and glance on my minuscule, insignificant, meaningless, and worthless life. So that's the prayer one makes while bathing. So that's what our end of our little talk about Magh Mas Brat in 2011, which I thought it goes nicely together. It's like Tatvan Leela in one sense, although it's Swapna Leela. But these type of vratas are done where people only drink cow urine or panchagavya, five things from the cow, very purifying. And maybe I can contemplate on such a thing in the future. But I was very much attracted to the idea of speaking Bhagavatam day and night. I would certainly like to have the qualification in the Rasika Bhavuvaka. A real speaker of Bhagavatam is described in the first canto of Bhagavatam. He must be Rasika Bhavuvaka. He must be qualified to relish the rasa of the Rasa Shastra Bhagavatam and situated in Bhava Bhakti. Then he can really speak the Bhagavatam. Because the Bhagavatam is the Prem Rasa of Radha and Krishna, not stories of Dhruva and Rukmini, Haran, and Anukut and all the things they tell with lots of song and dance and synthesizers and flutes and tablas. But it's the real speaking of the Bhagavatam is to distribute the Prem Rasa. And when you hear the Bhagavatam spoken by some genuine, pure saint, like, there's so many, but I know one, and I'm so proud and happy that I'm very fortunate little brother of Pujyapad Srila Radha Govinda Swami, who hails from Bihar, which is a very holy place. It's the birthplace of our Lord Buddha. God was born there, in Bihar. It's not a joke. It's a holy place. So he speaks the Bhagavatam, maybe not a little less now, sort of a little bit slowing down, but previously very enthusiastically, and just the real thing. He really speaks the Bhagavatam. So this is Magmas, nice. We can try to consider practicing a little austerity to purify our existence on this holy month. Magmas Bratta ki jai. Padma Purana ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is Tattva Darshan Part 3, February 4, 2011. This is another class. And this subject here is the Krishna's Tandava Nritya and Radharani's Lasya Nritya. Tandava is a very, it's called, we can say, a male power dance. It's a powerful dance. We must have heard of, you've heard of Nataraj Shiva. We have Gaur Nataraj, who's quite an extraordinary dancer, Lord Gauranga. And of course, our Krishna, he dances in the Rasalila. It's probably one of the most famous pastimes of Bhagavan Sri Krishna in the whole world, Rasalila. And I wanted to just read a section here. I have an English edition here of Govinda Lilamrita, which was never printed for various reasons due to Guru's wish. But we had three or four English editions of Govinda Lilamrita, one of them that was even unpublished itself, with the Sanskrit verses, and we went through them once about, 1988 or something, about shortly after we got here, and we redid it and wrote it in English, because I always read these different editions, and I said, I don't like the way it reads. I want to make a new one. So I made one, and I typed it out, and I printed it, and I read from it. So it's the translation of other God brothers. So I didn't translate it, but I just made it friendly to my own ears with a language that I like. So I wanted to share this description of the Rasalila to understand. And this particular pastime, although basically it's just dancing, and Krishna is known as Kala Nidhi, and Radharani is known as Kalavati. And Krishna, he has all the arts. Radharani is the expert displayer of all those arts, and she's expert in all those arts. So the analogy is often given of a music store. You go to Bombay, there's some very big music stores, and they have tablas and saros and everything. And the guy has all the instruments there. And you ask him, you say, do you know how to play? And he said, I play a little tabla. That's all. So this is like Krishna. He owns all the arts, the 64 kalas. This is the analogy. They're all within him. He's the origin of all these arts. But so he's like Kala Nidhi. He's an ocean of arts. But now another person comes in to buy some musical instrument in the store in Bombay, and he picks up the tabla, expertly plays it. He picks up the swara mandala, and he expertly plays it. He picks up the harmonium, expertly plays it. He picks up the Veena, sitar, and esaraj, and all the different Indian instruments, guitar, this expert. And the music store owner says, "Wow, you're so expert. How did?" He said, "Yeah, this is I'm expert in these things. I'm a sangeet visharad, or virtuoso in all these things." So he becomes what they call kalavati. He becomes an expert in all the arts, expert displayer of all the arts, expert exhibitor of all the arts. He may possess all the instruments, but he can't play them and distribute the beauty of all these instruments, or the variety of these instruments. But you have them and you can sell them. So Krishna has all these arts, but who can display these arts to the most wonderfully attractive and beautifully sweet, charming way? And that is none other than Kalavati Radha Ki Jai. So it's Kalanidhi and Kalavati. So in the Rasa dance, Krishna is Kalanidhi and she's Kalavati. And it's explained that although they have so many other confidential Nikunja Leelas and intimate exchanges of amorous affairs, Radha and Krishna and transcendental bodies and transcendental realm of Vrindavan, Radharani and Krishna himself says, "I find so much pleasure. I feel more ecstatic pleasure in the Rasa dance than I do even in the when I'm alone with Radharani in the Kunjas of Vrindavan. Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari." I just want to read a small section here, which I've never read to you all before. Describes a part of the Rasa dance. There's many different dances that take place in what is called Rasa dance, and many rasas and moods of love exchanged, and Vyavachari Bhavas and secondary rasas, and all in the context of Shringar Ras, Parakiya Bhav, Madhurya Ras. But this particular description here, it's towards the end. This is about 12 o'clock at night for 24 minutes. This goes on, and this is kind of the end. It's kind of like what we call music. It's called a crescendo. You know a crescendo? The music they're playing, it's called a climax. There's some symphony or something, or some concert. That's called a crescendo, right? You're rising to the highest point. You follow? I don't know what you say in Hindi, but... So there's so many dances, Krishna holding the shoulder of each one and between the gopis or expanding one into all the form, different gopis, different ideas. And they're going in a circle, and there's one circle going inside another circle, and there's Radha and Krishna dancing one circle in the middle, then asasakis around them, and then 16 sakis, and there's three circles, then the three become one, and Krishna and Radha are in the inner circle, then they hold hands with the outer circle, and then that go out and becomes one, and then that goes out and joins the third one, the three circles become one and they go around. This is the Rasa Mandala. So these all have names like Chalukya dance. Chalukya dance is when a gopi, like they do in Mukhara even today, gopi takes a big tray and puts on her head, usually a kumbha. And gopis take a kumbha, water kumbha, one or two, put it in their hand and they dance with a pot on their head because they're so expert at carrying yogurt and Jamuna water and all these things. And the music is played, and four kinds of musical instruments were played in the Rasa dance: stringed instruments, and wind instruments, and percussion instruments, and drums and cymbals. Then the fifth instrument is played. What is the fifth instrument that combines with the other four? Waist bells, ankle bells, bangles, and bracelets. So jing 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 ting ting ting, and all this, flutes and veenas. And mridangas and hand cymbals, and so there's cymbals and all these things. So then on top of that, then they're singing. Sometimes they're singing songs, or they're singing the bowls. Like if you ever see musicians, you're all Indian, so you're familiar. There's a sitar player and a tabla player, and sometimes the sitar player is playing. He's going ta 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 ta. He's as he's playing. If you've ever seen a concert, then the tabla player is going ta 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 ta. He chants the mantras and he hits the drum. Have you ever seen?
Yes.
Ta 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 ti ta ta ta. And then he just stops and he's just playing. Oh, it's like marvelous. I was so astounded when I was about 18. I was in New York. My brother went to the first sitar recital. Ravi Shankar was the world's greatest in New York City, Madison Square Garden. and Ali Akbar Khan or someone like that. Ali Akbar Khan on tabas. And I was, and we were, you know, we were used to electric guitars and Jimi Hendrix and the Doors and all these hard rock and Pink Floyd and all this. And we went there. This is a thousands and thousands of years old Indian sitar and tabla. Like, wow, we're like playing folk music. These heavy metal hard rock concerts that we go to, live concerts. This is like my baby. Just like plucking on a classical guitar compared to this. Oh, it's like, and whole audience is full of young people and all long hair, and they clap. He got like, Ravi Shankar got a standing ovation for like 20 minutes. We were so appreciative. That's why Indians love to go to the West, because they get so much appreciation. He plays in India, they go, thank you. Next. You know, it's like, okay, Ravi Shankar, there's so many of these guys. This is the first one anybody ever heard, and it's like, wow, this is amazing. It's Indian music, and people went wild. In the 60s and 70s, the first time it ever appeared in America. So now imagine the Rasa dance, how beautiful, how sweet, and echoing through the universe. So we'll just read this and to share the beauty of this Tandava and Lasya. Tandava is a male dance and Lasya. So this is when this is the end. They're dancing together, arm in arm. It's almost like waltzing or something. They're just doing really doing simple stuff. You know, dancing this that. Then at the end they break into one by one. Okay, what we say get down and dance. And so let's read it. Thereafter, Krishna dances with the most, because he's dancing with 16,000 in the Maharas dance and Sharad Purnima. Now he says, okay. Girls, you're satisfied? You want to dance with the Ras? I promised you last year. A year from now, you'll be my wives and this, that, Kanya Kumari. So now that's all satisfied. Now sit down and watch. Now watch the real thing. Now I'm going to dance, now I'm going to really dance with my inner circle of friends, because we know how to dance. And we've been all mixing up with you people, and you don't know who's who. Now I want to, because Krishna is proud of his gopis. He's proud of Radharani. He's proud of Asasaki. He's proud of his devotees, as we're proud of Krishna. So he wants to show off. He says, okay, you girls have all been dancing nice, all equally, very nice, good dancers and mudras, everything. But now you want to see the teachers of all dance and the teacher of all teachers of dance perform. You want to see the real thing? And I was dancing with you all. Now I'm going to dance by myself. And Radharani will play the Veena and the other gopis. And then you'll see what I can do. Because now I'll be dancing only for Radharani and my Astasakis. And now they're going to dance, and you're all going to watch. So 16,100 sat down in a circle around all the other gopis. And they watched this performance, which was described. This was like peace, you know, par excellent. So, reading this for the last 20 years, I said, this is too good. I was reading this morning. I was like transformed. Thereafter, Krishna dances with the most rustic Brajagopis, following the beat of numerous talas and prabandha singing. And I describe, define all what all that is. Shyam dances a duet with Radhika. So that's Radhika, and just right now, they haven't danced together the whole night. This is at the end. This is the last act or last show. Because everyone's tired, but they're not tired, and they want to say, okay, we please you, you're satisfied. Now I'll please Radha, and Radha will please me. Now you'll see the perfection of loving exchanges. Shyam dances a duet with Radhika, while Lalita's group sings, and Chitra's group sustains the beat with their instruments. Brinda and others watch in amazement. So this is the in crowd. This is Radharani Sakhi. Because in the other Maharaj stands, everybody's there. Chandravali, everybody's there. Padma, Shaiva, Paksha, Vipaksha, everyone. They all became one in that Maharaj stance. That was the whole reason why Krishna left. To bring in one mind and one heart. To some extent. But now he says, okay, that's nice. We're all one and different. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. So now he says, okay. So nobody else, and Chitra's, you know, this is Ashtasakhi, this is my band. The gopis sitting on the side of the Rasa Mandala, singing and playing instruments, look like a curtain surrounding the dancers. Although the drums, flutes, brass, and stringed instruments play simultaneously, their music harmonizes perfectly with the dance steps of Krishna and the gopis. One after another, each gopi displays her skill in dancing with mudras, eye gestures, eyebrow movements, and spectacular footsteps. Shyam Sundar, the topmost rustic dancer, repeatedly dashes from the midst of the gopis to the center stage. Shyam executes intricate steps, flowing hand movements, and then excites them by abruptly exclaiming, "Ta ta tai, drik ati, drikatai, drik ta tai, drik ta tai, ta." Continuing to dance, Krishna recites the prabandha, "To dik dum dum, kita kita ganjong, to ko to dikuare jum, jum jum jum, kiti 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 dum, jum ku jum, jinku jum, jum to dik." Dum dum jimmy jimmy dum dum kanku jum jum kanku dum. And then saying all these mantras and dancing, foot like this, dum dum dum. Your daughter were like this. Then I was hoping she would come, but it's her misfortune. I thought of her. Then like a lightning streak within the Krishna cloud, Radhika's kankans, her bangles, her kankans are kinkinis, waist bells, and nupuras, ankle bells, jingle enchantingly as she rotates her arms and boldly exclaims, "Tatai tai, tatai tai, tai, tatai ta," while dancing out the bowls with her foot movements. Dancing on, Radhika ecstatically recites, "Dum dum drik drika drik drik chum chum, ni nam nam, ni nam nam. Ni nam tuk tuk tum tum, guru 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 drum drum, guru drum guru drum, deka deka do do kirti 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 drum drummy drum drummy drum drum." Swift as lightning, Lalita Sundari leaps to the center that is sham colored by Krishna's bodily effulgence. As the bangles on Lalita's left hand resound, "Jana, jana, jana," she smiles and loudly says, "Tai, tai, to, ta, tigara, tigara, to. Tai, ta, tai, to, tai, ta, tai, ta." And it dances that out. And Krishna's like, wow. And then next, Vishakha dances in harmony. I mean, someday we'll see this. We'll be there, sitting on the side, clapping, playing mridanga or tabla or pukkawaj. And this will be gone. Then Vishakha dances in harmony with the kan kan kan, kan 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 of the veena and the mridangas, drimmy 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 drimmy, do do do. While expertly dancing, Vishakha's ornaments make a jana jana jat jat sound, jana jat jana jat, as she recites the bowl, drigiti drigiti drik, tai to 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 to. One beautiful gopi, her bangles, kinkanis, and nupuras jingling sweetly, dances while excitedly uttering tai ta. Tai, tai, ta, tai, tai. Another sakhi moves her hands and feet rapidly to harmonize with her tinkling bangles and ankle bells. She recites the bowl, tai, 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 ta, ta, tai. Another lovely gopi displays her dancing talents and boldly utters, tai, yat, tai, yat, ta, 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 tai, yat, tai, yat, tai, yat, tigger, ta, 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 tai, yat. While enjoying the dancing of the Braja Gopis, Krishna joyfully sings, "Ayati ayati ayati ah." Hey Radhe, just see, the moonlit Yamuna's bank dances along with us, "Ayati and Priye, the forest is dancing with its Malayan breezes, "Ayati hai." Thus Krishna sings and dances, Rai Vinodini. Now that's a beautiful name for Radha. Rai Vinodini. Rai means like, it means like ruler, a king or something. And Vinodini means like Vinod, you know, pleasure, one who gives pleasure, relishes pleasure. Right? Isn't it Vinod? Rai Vinodini. It's Radharani. Dances while singing. Oh, hey Priya. Looking at Krishna, your smile is effulgent like the moon, softer than the kunda flowers, more playful than the swan, tastier than kheer, and glossier than a pearl necklace. Ai, are, are, ai, 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 are, are, ai, ai, ai. Although appearing Like dull objects, the mind enchanting mridangas are actually great pundits, for they resound ta-dik, 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 to spite the dancing of the celestial nymphs, which cannot compare with the expertise of the Brajagopis. Then the gopis, who are singing and playing veenas, mridangas and flutes, stand up and start dancing ecstatically. They're playing veenas and dancing, and mridangas and dancing, and flutes, that's not so hard to dance. As the beautiful gopis lose themselves in the splendor of the ras, their blouses, braids, and undergarments loosen. Rasik Mohan quickly dances up to retie the gopis' loosened clothes. Very charitable person. The youthful gopis cleverly create newer and newer ragas and raganis using the scales. Sa-ri-ga-pa-da-ni. With thousands of voices and songs, the Braja gopis sing Shuddha and Sankirna, unchanged and mixed songs belonging to the Marga and Desiya, heavenly and worldly category. The gopis' brass instruments resound like thunder. Like wampers, when you play wampers, it sounds boom, boom, sounds like thunder, especially those big ones like Jaya Pataka. Their wind instruments produce a fine pinhole-like resonance. That's called precision playing. The gopis' stringed instruments echo throughout the breadth of the sky, and their drums establish a rich, jewel-like sound. Now that's the way to play the mridanga. A rich, jewel-like sound. The bangles, armlets, waist bells, and ankle bells of Krishna and the gopis make a fifth type of instrument, which rings enchantingly to blend with the dancing. As the dancing continues, the Braja gopis sing, enact dramas with their hands, keep the beat with their feet, shake their necks and hips, and move their eyes from right to left. Fixing their attention on Krishna's lotus face, they become lost in erotic rapture. Effortlessly, the gopis sing those shrutis, murchanas, and gamakas that are impossible for humans to divide without the help of a veena. One expert gopi blends the undivided shrutis, gamakas, and jatis to sing superbly. Krishna praises her and says, "Hey, Saki, sadhu, sadhu," means well done, bravo. But when she frowns to chastise him, Krishna respects her even more. Then Radha begins her chalukya dancing while balancing a water pot on her head, and she enthralls Krishna. Unable to find a more suitable reward, Krishna offers himself as a reward and firmly embraces Radha. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Sometimes Murli Dara's flute playing inspires Radhika's dancing. When Krishna slips on the tala while beholding Radha's sweet smile while she dances, he's playing the flute and she's dancing, and she smiles and he goes, he lost the tala, lost the beat. Radha jingles her bangles to correct his blunder and concludes the song with graceful steps. Although the Sakis eagerly assist Radha Rasabihari's dancing with their own fantastic dancing, singing, and playing of musical instruments, they cannot match the talents of the divine couple. Just as the last beat falls, Krishna's hand reaches out, reaches out to touch Priyaji's breast. Although intrigued by his witty behavior, Radha feigns anger, that means pretends, and brushes his hand away. Now let's try to envision this picture of this gopi. One gopi kneels on the ground to dance. This is done in the Rasa-lila. Krishna does this peacock thing around this. She kneels on the ground to dance while stretching out her creeper-like arms. She appears like Cupid's golden chakra as she spins around and around on her knees. It's like Krishna, the arms are out like this. Arms are obviously to the side. She's going on her knees, rotating on the Rasa Mandala. Krishna does this in the Rasa Lila before. You see? It's
Too long. Everyone goes wild when he does that. Another young gopi repeatedly extends and contracts her arms. Then she displays many difficult poses while touching various bodily limbs. You know, this. One gopi turns her body to the sky while touching the ground with her right hand, and she rotates above her left hand. It means cartwheels. You know what a cartwheel is? Yeah. You know, tut-tut, like that. Sometimes she falls on the ground and performs a rotating dance without any support, which I can't quite visualize. I have to chant more and try to see it. One slim-waisted gopi's ankle bells jingle in time with the music. One, two, three. One, two, three. When she silences her ankle bells while continuing to dance, the other gopis exclaim, "Well done, well done." The gopis' supremely skillful rasa dancing for Krishna's pleasure alone far surpasses the singing, dancing, and music performed by Brahma, Shiva, and other demigods for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. What to speak of Lakshmi's talents? Krishna sometimes kisses the gopis and petitions them for conjugal pleasure while enjoying their inconceivable dancing prowess. And while dancing, Krishna induces the gopis to dance. He sings and they sing in response. He glorifies them and the gopis glorify him. This is like the world of love. Krishna enjoys with the gopis just as a boy plays with his own shadow. That's a verse right from the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, Rasalila chant. One gopi places Krishna's scented arm on her shoulder. As its divine fragrance enters her nostrils, she shivers, haripilates, and sheds tears of joy. Being stunned, that gopi appears like steady lightning streak within a fresh monsoon cloud. The gopi's dancing fatigue personifies as a friendly sakhi to decorate their cheeks and foreheads with attractive beads of perspiration as a sign of their sweet pastimes with Krishna. At the end of the rasa dance, Krishna relishes seeing the loosened hair and clothes of the gopis, their heaving breasts, their foreheads and cheeks beautified with drops of perspiration, and their bodies weakened from exhaustion. Seeing lotus-eyed Krishna's Makara Kundala dancing on his cheeks captivates one dance teacher among the beautiful gopis. Placing her cheek beside Krishna's, she opens her mouth and accepts Krishna's prasadi pan. After placing her arms on Krishna's shoulder, one gopi blissfully leans against him and takes rest. Merciful Madhava wipes the perspiration from the gopi's face with his lotus hands. But his divine touch brings on sattvic ecstasies that double their perspiration. With a graceful gesture, one friendly gopi uses Krishna's chatur to wipe the perspiration from her own face. Then she wipes Krishna's face with her veil. Many doe-eyed gopis submerge in waves of ecstasy simply from Krishna's touch. These gopis cannot stop their garlands, ornaments, clothes, and hair from loosening. Thus Krishna concludes his rasa festival with its many pastimes of music, dancing, and singing. Krishna performs this pastime only with the gopis. Observing Radha Govinda's desire for romance arising, Brinda escorts them along the camphor-white sands of the Yamuna and seats them on a bedstead in a kunj. She and the sakis offer various services for the pleasure of Radha Madhav. Radha Rasa Bihari's Rasa Utsav Ki Jai. Shri Brajadam Rasa Mandala Ki Jai. Shri Maharas Dance Ki Jai. So this is a very sweet note of the prayojana, or the goal of our lives, to enter the sweet dancing pastimes of Krishna as his servant and as Radha's servant. And Prabhupada often say in the early days, he said, you can eat with Krishna. You can talk with Krishna. You can eat with Krishna. You can play with Krishna. You can dance with Krishna. Just chant Hare Krishna and join my movement and go back home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tattva Darshan, appearance day of Sri Advaitacharya Mahavishnu. Sri Advaitacharya Prabhu is Mahavishnu himself, the first material cause of the universe. He is Vishnu Tattva and equal with Godhead. The spiritual eternal form of Vishnu is the beginning of all, yet he himself has no beginning. There is none with whom he has no mother and no father. He is self-manifested in expansion as a Purushavatar of Krishna. Yet he wanted to experience Vatsalya Ras, the affection of a parent, mother and father, and to develop and experience those sentiments of devotees in Vatsalya Ras. Although he is the father of all the jivas, as Mahavishnu, Advaitacharya appears as a son of his own devotee,